Hello, and welcome to the Lane Cassette Podcast. It's been a while since I've done an episode. I've had some things going on in my personal life, including working fuckloads of overtime at my 9-to-5 job, which made me not motivated to do a damn thing when I got off of work. At the end of this past March, I put out an update and intended to start releasing new episodes by the middle of April. Unfortunately, 2 days after that, my beloved dog and best friend Marley got sick and died a week later, despite our best efforts to save him. And once again, I didn't feel like doing a fucking thing after that. I wallowed in my misery for a few weeks, but now I know I need to get back on the horse, so to speak, and get back to life. I will always love and miss him, so this episode is dedicated to Marley. Now that I brought the mood down, it's time to pick it back up with the delightful camp of Batman the Movie. Many people may think, and Warner Brothers has positioned Tim Burton's 1989 Batman as the first live-action Batman, but not so fast, my friend. Over 30 years earlier, Adam West's Batman graced the big screen. One reason Warner's has positioned Burton's Batman as the first is because it was their first. This movie was made by 20th Century Fox, which had, and still to this day, has the rights to make Batman television shows. Before we get into the movie, I'll briefly give you a backstory of the TV show. Early in the 60s, Ed Graham Productions optioned the TV rights for a Batman TV show, specifically for children. Graham tried to pitch the TV show but couldn't find a suitor, and DC Comics obtained the rights and they struck a deal with ABC, who in turn co-opted the rights to 20th Century Fox to produce the series. William Dozier and his company, Greenway Productions, decided to make a campy, fun TV show. Adam West and Burt Ward ended up winning the roles of the dynamic duo. The show would end up airing on ABC and became a TV phenomenon and is considered one of the landmark shows of the 1960s. Originally, Dozier pitched a movie to lead into a TV series, but the studio declined because they would have to foot the entire bill for a movie as opposed to split it with ABC. However, Dozier was able to get his movie made, and it hit theaters between the first and second season of the TV show. The movie was written by showwriter Lorenzo Semple Jr. and directed by Leslie H. Martin, who also directed a couple of episodes of the show. Dozier was a producer. Nelson Riddle was responsible for the music which accompanied Neil Hefti's classic theme. Adam West and Burt Ward star as Batman and Bruce Wayne, Robin and Dick Grayson. Lee Merriweather replaces the previous Catwoman from the series, Julie Newmar. Eartha Kitt would go on to play the character in the third and final season of the show. This is the only casting change between the movie and the TV show. Everyone else reprises their roles. Cesar Romero's the Joker, and Cesar actually famously refused to shave his mustache when he was cast as the Joker for the show, so you can see it under his makeup in the show as well as in the movie here. Burgess Meredith plays the role of the Penguin. The role was originally offered to Mickey Rooney, but he declined. Frank Gorshin plays the Riddler in our quartet of villains. Alan Napier is Alfred. Napier had never even heard of Batman before he took the role. His last name was also the inspiration for the last name of the Joker in the 1989 Batman movie. Madge Blake appears as Aunt Harriet. Neil Hamilton and Stafford Rep play Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara. And Reginald Denny is Commodore Schmitlap. Vaughn Williams also lends his voice uncredited as President Lyndon B. Johnson. There were three new vehicles made for this movie: the Batcycle, Batcopter, and Batboat. However, the cycle was the only one used again for the TV show after the movie due to budget. Batman the Movie premiered at the Paramount Theater in Austin, Texas on July 30th, 1966. It made $3.9 million against a budget of around $1.5 million. Well, let's check the shit out. There's a little weird, sarcastic-looking text at the beginning, dedicating the movie to fun lovers everywhere, to let you know if you take it serious, you are a fucking idiot. The title sequence is something to behold, with our heroes and villains having colored spotlights shine on them as they each walk goofily along a building down an alley. After various cuts of this and someone running down the alley, we finally get started. A narrator tells us a yacht is bringing a huge scientific invention to Gotham, so we already know what our MacGuffin is. Bruce and Dick race back to Wayne Manor as a narrator tells us they were called back anonymously as the yacht and its owner are in danger. They wave to Alfred and Aunt Harriet as they enter the manor. Once inside, they hilariously run in their Mr. Rogers-esque sweaters to the Batcave. I love how they slide down the fire pools, and Bruce hits a lever when they get about halfway, and then when they arrive at the bottom, they are changed into their costumes. Like, what in the actual fuck is that? They take the Batmobile to the airport to get the Batcopter. They wave at Myers as they fly through Gotham. They approach the yacht and Robin drops the bat ladder and Batman starts to descend to the yacht. As Batman goes to step on the ship, it disappears and he is dipped into the water. And when Robin pulls him up, the most vicious looking rubber shark you have ever seen in your life has Batman's leg in its mouth. Here we get holy sardines from Robin, and I'm starting the holy counter just to see how many we get in this thing, and that's the first. Batman punches and kicks the shit out of this rubber shark with the most ridiculous sounding punches you've ever heard. Robin departs the Batcopter to hand him the shark repellent bat spray. Lucky they had that on board. But seriously, with Robin leaving the controls of the copter, how the fuck doesn't it plummet right into the ocean and crash? Robin gets Batman the spray, Batman sprays the shark, and it falls into the ocean and explodes. Back at police headquarters, the dynamic duo are meeting with members of the press and answer some questions. The press asks about the yacht and the owner, Commodore Schmidt-Lapp. The press knows about the invention and exploding shark, and Batman downplays their claims. Batman calls on a woman from a Moscow paper, and she asks Batman and Robin to take their masks off for a better picture. The room erupts, and Batman explains why they can't. Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara are particularly infuriated by the request, before telling her that they are deputized agents of the law, because she said about them being masked vigilantes, and so they had to go into the whole... They're deputies. Robin gives us a corny ask, support your police line, and the press is ushered out. Batman reveals when the press leaves that if they knew the truth, panic would grip the city. So we know that this is serious, and that Batman's a fucking liar. Batman figures the yacht was a trap. Well, no shit, dude. Commissioner Gordon literally tells his secretary to get him a list of known super criminals still at large. She beams it to a TV in his office, and we see the Penguin, Joker, Riddler, and Catwoman. After some shitty and punny detective work, Batman thinks it's fishy what happened to him. So it must be Penguin. Robin says that it happened at sea. C for Catwoman. To see that you were in Robin is S-E-A. C for Catwoman is the letter C, you dipshit. Batman says the shark was pulling his leg, and Chief O'Hara says it's a sinister riddle. So that's how they come to the conclusion it's all four of them after those fucking mental gymnastics. Batman and Robin rush off to the Batcave, and we see the Russian reporter get dropped off at a smoky-ass bar where people are either making out or fighting. When greeted by a pirate-looking fuck, he calls her Catwoman, and she slaps him and scolds him about calling her by her real name in public. She does this with an American-ass fuck accent, so the whole Russian thing's a ruse. We see the Joker doing tricks in front of a big logo that reads United Underworld. That's the name of these super criminals, you see. Catwoman enters as they bicker, and she makes some kind of quip about the United World by the East River. So, we can assume we have our targets. They all have their own shelves with name tags on them, like they're kindergartners, so that's kind of cute. Catwoman drops the name of her alias, Miss Kitka. She tells them Batman and Robin are clueless. We learn they have taken Commodore Schmidt Lap hostage. The Commodore thinks the Joker hasn't been getting enough sun when the Joker takes him his tea. That's why he's so pasty. They're making the Commodore think that the yacht is stranded by having a replica of his room and someone working outside the window to appear as if they are at sea. Yeah, he's in this cabin looking room, and then when the Joker exits, we see that they have a like a big picture of what looks to be ocean. There's a guy outside splashing in the water with his feet, and they have some kind of salt smell thing. It's quite a setup they got. The Commodore also proves to be a fucking moron by telling the Joker about his million-dollar invention below decks. The villains already know this, but this dude's a fucking idiot just for the principle of running his mouth. Back in with the other villains, the Penguin has two goons ready their submarine because he thinks he knows Batman's next move. In the Batcave, they look at a picture and figure that a buoy at that position triggered an illusion, and they confirm it after some quick work on the Batcomputer, because there's not supposed to be a buoy there. Love how they stay in full costume, even in their masks, when there's no real reason to while they're chilling in the Batcave. They head to the Batboat so they can dust it for prints. They speed out to the buoy. The dynamic duo ponder where the real boat might be at. Robin checks the scope, and it appears they are all alone. Of course, the scope didn't pick up the villain sub heading for the same location. Penguin, Riddler, and Joker use what must be a long-ass scope because it pokes out of the top of the water to observe Batman and Robin. Batman's little fingerprint kit looks like a bat purse. Batman and Robin find the lens and spot the periscope spying on them. The villains turn the buoy into a giant magnet that holds the heroes there by their utility belts. Then they launch torpedoes at them, but Batman has a gadget that destroys the first two. But then something happens we all know and hate. The fucking batteries die. The torpedoes are coming from awfully far away when we just saw the villain sub right under Batman and Robin. And the villains celebrate as they think they have finally killed them, but when they use the scope, our heroes and their boat are gone. Turns out a porpoise swam in the way of the last torpedo. No blood anywhere on them or any evidence of that either. Back at the Batmobile, they call an admiral at the Pentagon who is playing a child's game with his assistant. He asks the admiral if they have sold any war surplus submarines. Because that's a thing the government does, I guess. And hilarious that the Admiral would even tell him if he did. He fesses up they sold a pre-atomic sub-model to a P.N. Gwynne. Batman basically calls him a dipshit in a very witty PC way as they hang up. A Polaris missile shoots out of the sea, and we get number two on our holy count, as Robin says, "Holy Polaris!" It explodes, and two riddles appear. What does a turkey do when it flies upside down? And what weighs 6 ounces, sits in a tree, and is very dangerous? Back at headquarters with, quote-unquote, help from Gordon and O'Hara, they figure the answers out. Gobble up and sparrow with a machine gun. More mental gymnastics to get to Catwoman because the turkey is supposed to gobble up the sparrow, I guess. I don't fucking care because they already did this shit earlier with the C is for Catwoman bullshit. Fuck off, Robin. Batman says since there are four, they must be trying to take over the world. Because Commissioner says, what could they want? Take over the city? And Batman goes, maybe two. And the country? And Batman goes, maybe three. But four, they must have the world. At villain headquarters, they have an exposition party where Catwoman says they are trying to get to the Security Council at the United World Building. They are still frustrated about being unable to kill Batman and Robin, and the Joker has a convoluted as fuck idea. Use Catwoman as bait. Lure them there with a riddle. They will step on the Joker's jack-in-a-box, get sprung out of a window, and into the Penguin's exploding octopus. Cool plan, bro. Catwoman is going to go as Kitka and seduce Bruce Wayne, of course, to further complicate things. This will cause Batman to come and save him. They think. We flash to Kitka talking to Bruce inside Wayne Manor. She tells him she found riddles written on Wayne Foundation stationery sent to her. Bruce definitely wants to fuck her if Adam West himself doesn't. They make plans to meet up later. Alfred sees her out, and Bruce retreats to the Batcave and tells Robin the riddles. What has yellow skin and writes? Robin answers, a ballpoint banana. What people are always in a hurry? Russian. So, they deduce that the only possible meaning is a threat on Kitka's life. Batman tells Alfred and Robin the plan is for them to follow him in the Batmobile in case Bruce and Kitka are attacked, as Bruce attempts to get them cheeks. They're eating at a fancy restaurant and take a horse-drawn carriage as they exit to go dancing. He is careful not to lay his hand against her as they dance, as to not upset the parents of the kids watching this back then, because sex or any alluding to it was a big no-no. Bruce shoots his shot with a little Cold War talk, which was going on between the US and Russia at the time. One thing about this movie I never noticed as a kid was just how much political satire was in it. Robin feels weird about watching them on the camera, so he shuts it off. Amazing little pre-FaceTime he's got there for 1966, and HD too. Robin calls the commissioner and has him turn on the bat signal. The logic is that if the criminals see it, they may strike fast on her and fall into Batman and Robin's trap. O'Hara lights it up. Bruce and Kitka continue to flirt as she sends a message with this little cat transmitter thing to her comrades. And they continue flirting and they allude to sex by talking about climaxes and shit, which makes me a fucking liar. Thanks a lot, dicks. Back at her apartment, they make out right in front of the camera that we can only assume Bruce placed, because how else would it be there? Robin turns off the monitor again. Because, you know, he's a dipshit. The villains approach on jet umbrellas as Kitka continues to flirt with Bruce. I autocorrect put fist, so maybe she did fist Bruce. Right before they can kiss, the other three villains and a couple henchmen break in and assault Bruce, as Kitka has to stop herself from acting like a cat. Because apparently, when she's like being chill Catwoman, she just purrs and hisses and whatever the fuck. Robin turns the TV back on to see that the place has been ransacked, and he sees the umbrellas as they fly away. Holy Halloween! That's number three. Bruce is knocked out as Catwoman howls at the moon as they fly across the sky, and then we see a newspaper headline about the kidnapping. Bruce has been there for hours, and they can't figure out why Batman hasn't arrived yet. Bruce wakes up and demands to see Kitka. He threatens them and runs into walls like an idiot as he attempts to charge them. They do agree to let him see Kitka, and when they take him to her, even though half Catwoman's face is covered, it's amazing he can't tell the difference that they are the same person. That he can't see. He's supposed to be the world's greatest detective, but he's just the biggest fucking idiot ever. The others listen in on their conversation as Bruce tells her he has a radio transmitter above his left elbow. The other villains take him away and untie him, and Bruce starts whooping all their asses real 1960s cartoonish-esque style. One of the henchmen falls into the Joker's jack-in-a-box trap, and it throws him into the exploding octopus. Bruce gets in the room Kitka was in, only to see she has vanished. That should have been the biggest fucking sign, dude. He hops out the window and he manages to get away. The commissioner was hanging out at his house, and Bruce sends him away when he makes it home. Again, if the commissioner doesn't know Bruce and Dick are Batman and Robin, he's a fucking idiot. They head down to the Batcave and rush away. The Penguin has a plan, and he sends the Joker to drug the Commodore and take him to the sub. A henchman brings in 5 guinea pigs, complete with shirts that say GP1, GP2, and so on. This big invention is a total dehydrator that is supposed to be used to make whiskey. Penguin zaps these guinea pigs, and they all turn into little colored piles of dust. It shows the canister part of the gun getting water, but only like a mouthful, so I guess there isn't that much fucking moisture in any of our bodies, apparently, according to this movie. They scoop them into separate vials. It seems the Penguin has a plan to get invited into the Batcave with the dehydrated pirates. Batman and Robin arrive at the dock. They race to the building where Bruce was held hostage and do their famous walk up the wall. And they are about to enter the room. Bruce sees a bomb and he shoos Robin away. He goes in and looks for Kika real quick again. Dude's fucking clueless. Batman then leaves and he tries to get rid of the bomb. And this is one of the most well-remembered parts of the movie. He goes to throw it out the window and a marching band is playing right outside of the window. He exits down through the bar and he warns everyone to leave. They do, except 2 big women sitting there eating. Fat shaming, check. He runs on to the dock again. He is cut off by 2 nuns as he attempts to run. Then by a lady pushing a stroller, and then the marching band again. Actually, there's like 3 people, so it's more like a marching triplet, whatever. Fuck off. He goes to toss it in the water, but he sees a guy climbing up a ladder. He goes to toss it somewhere else, and he sees 2 young lovers kissing. As he runs off again, he runs into the nuns again, the stroller lady, and the band. He gets to the water and won't throw it because there are some ducks in the path. And here he delivers this immortal line that still lives to this day. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Yeah, Adam, you're never getting rid of this shit. He runs off screen and we hear the bomb explode. Robin catches up and Batman tells him he was able to get rid of the bomb in the nick of time. Holy heart failure, number 4. Penguin, disguised as the Commodore, approaches Batman and Robin. They aren't fooled and they know it's him. They're going to take him to the Batcave to do a retinal eye scan. They knock him out with bat gas and return to the cave. Batman wakes him up when they arrive, and the Penguin asks for water, and he hooks up a hose and rehydrates the pirates. The slightest hit makes the pirates disappear because of the heavy water. Batman tells the Penguin he believes him and that he must have been duped. Of course, Batman knows better. Robin and him take anti-gas pills, and when they wake Penguin up after leaving the cave, the Penguin gasses them. And they do allow him to steal the Batmobile. They then take the Batcycle to the Batcopter to track the car. Joker, Catwoman, and the Riddler are aboard the sub. The Riddler fires off another missile, coming close to the Batcopter, causing them to crash land at a foam rubber convention. Holy fuck, that was lucky. Number 5 on the holy counter. Holy horseshoe! Because they're lucky, you see. 2 more riddles. What goes up white and comes down yellow and white? An egg. How do you divide 17 apples among 16 people? Make applesauce. They do some quick mental gymnastics and figure out the villain's target is the world headquarters. Batman and Robin run there as the sub arrives. The villains blow a door and break in. Penguin uses his gas umbrella to knock all the guards out. They get into the meeting room and dehydrate the bickering council. They put them all into separate vials, and they get away after Catwoman threatens violence to Kitka if Batman and Robin approaches her, or any of them. The villains get away in the sub, and the Riddler asks for $1 billion from each country for each one of the representatives. Batman and Robin race out to sea in the bat boat. The villains pick them up on radar and fire a homing missile at them. Robin uses Batman's gadget from earlier, and he's able to destroy the missile, the gadget they used when they were getting the torpedoes fired at him. They shoot more torpedoes, and Robin is able to blow them up as well. Robin uses a bat charge and aims it at the sub and shoots at it. He does this while they're circling the sub, and it causes the sub to take tremendous damage, and it surfaces. Batman and Robin board the sub. Joker, Riddler, and Penguin, along with henchmen, fight them. Here we get all the pow, zap, biff bullshit words popping up. They all fall into the drink, including Batman and Robin, but Batman and Robin manages to get out. They follow Catwoman, who falls, and it causes her mask to fall off, revealing that it's Miss Kitka. Holy heartbreak. For number 6. Batman calls in the Coast Guard. They find the vials, and the Commodore comes in and falls into Batman, causing the vials to break, and the Commodore sneezes and all the dust goes away. Flies across the room. Batman and Robin tell the Commissioner that if they can't separate them and return them back to form, no one can. Robin thinks maybe they should reshuffle the dust to make things better, but Batman refuses. He doesn't want to play God, basically. He calls the Commissioner and tells them they are ready to rehydrate. Gordon tells the President, who tells the other world leaders. Back at the World Headquarters, Gordon, O'Hara, and other onlookers look on as Batman and Robin ready to rehydrate. However, once they rehydrate everyone, they see they're all mixed up with different languages. Like, you got the English guy speaking maybe German, and the German guy speaking Israeli. All fucked up. Fucked up big time. Batman says maybe it was the greatest service ever performed, and they leave. To essentially throw the world into fucking chaos. This is the start of a horror movie, in my opinion. Like, what the fuck? We see Batman and Robin scale down the building as the credits roll. The positives: it is fun, and it does try to explain some of its lunacy. I can see why people dug it in the 60s. Very kid-friendly. It's ridiculous, but I could definitely see why people liked it. The negatives: it drug a lot of times, and it's over the top corniness got annoying after a while. Like, I understand Batman's not supposed to know it's Kitka, but it's ridiculous on its face, the whole premise of Batman, so you gotta take it for what it is, but there's only so much ridiculousness one person can take. Overall, this is a good snapshot of the 60s with the political satire and the Cold War references. This is the Batman that a lot of people were introduced to for the first time, including my dad, as their first Batman. There is still a lot of love for this version, and it has its place in history, and it will be remembered for a long, long time, likely long after we're all gone. I give it a thumbs up, even though it annoyed me at times. It could really... The constant over-the-top silliness and goofiness really did get grating after a while, but if you can just turn your brain off and enjoy it for what it is, it's a nice movie. And I think that originally I heard it was supposed to be like just 4 episodes of the TV show mashed up, and you can kind of see that they were going for something like that, like a big... like just like one big great long episode. I mean, but it was fine. I haven't watched it in years. I think I did watch it about 5 or 6 years ago, but I haven't watched it probably since I was a kid other than that, and I only watched it because I got the DVD, but it's a nice romp. We'll close that out. I would recommend that you watch it if you've never seen it, or you haven't seen it in a while, or you're just looking for something fun to watch. I do have a YouTube channel now where I will be uploading old episodes of the podcast and doing some new things like unboxing videos and renewing and reviewing some newer content. Maybe I'll do the cartoons, Return of the Caped Crusaders and Batman vs. Two-Face, because I have bought those, but I haven't watched them yet. And maybe since they're technically out of the VHS era, that's what I'll do. Because I will be looking at some point, I will be looking at the Never Sleep Again documentary, which I used as research for my Nightmare on Elm Street reviews. But I think that it's a good enough documentary that it merits its own episode on YouTube. And maybe I'll do the same thing with the Jason one. But please subscribe, because I am going to be doing lots of fun stuff over there. And I'm back here to stay. So, the next episode I will be doing, I don't know if it'll be next week or the week after, but the next episode is going to be my first documentary I'll be reviewing, Beyond the Mat, the seminal 90s documentary about pro wrestling business as it was back then. It came out in 99, and anybody who's a longtime listener knows I love me some 1999. So join me next time, right here on the Late and Cassette Podcast, and now on YouTube.